Okay, guys. Once again, my name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I am a member of the Carl Gables Group. It is a privilege and a pleasure to be here. This is the continuation of a step series. And I haven't found it necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. So this is, what's today's date?
The 19th.
So I got about, what, 6 more days to go, and then I'll make it to, hopefully, prayerfully, to 32 years. So I was thinking about that in the car. Well, my sponsor said, I said, how do you become an old-timer? He says, don't drink and don't die. So I've been working on both those deals, you know. I was thinking about that. I remember when I came here, I thought like 5 years was a long time, and I thought like 10 years, and if I could only have 15 years, then I'd have all the answers, and 20 years was like ancient, you know, and then 30 years. Ooh. But you can tell by looking at me, I've been somewhere for 30 years for a long time, you know. I came in when I was 31 years old, and I'm not sure how old I am now. I'm 63, I think. I'll be 64. I've been married 32 years and 4 children, 6 grandchildren, and I'm just going to share a little bit of my experience. And we're going to talk a little bit about the fifth step, maybe some other steps. You know, they're all mixed in there, and it's going to be like Pulp Fiction, you know, that movie. I'll start off in the middle, jump to the end. I'll be jumping all over the place. And, you know, it's just an AA meeting, you know. Hopefully nobody will drink during the meeting. I would ask you not to speak during the meeting or have conversations because I'm Alzheimer's?
Alzheimer's.
I'll tell you, anything will throw me off. You know, I came in here. I used to be brilliant. You missed me because you should have caught me when I was in the bars. You know, I knew everything. You know, I was like most alcoholics. I knew everything, and I came in here and I thought I still knew everything. You know, maybe I just need to learn a few things and. Like our founding fathers say, we know but a little. I found I don't know much now, and I came in here. I had 2 neurons left, and they were waving goodbye to each other. So I don't know much of anything. You know, it's amazing. I used to know everything. You know, when you know everything, your brain is just packed with so much knowledge. You know everything about everybody. You know everything about yourself. You know everything about the world. You're so brilliant, and you can control the world with your mind. Not, but you think you can. And you know, as a result of that, if you're an alcoholic, one of the things you do is you think a lot. And there's a lot of thinking going on. I've sponsored hundreds. I'm not even sure how many people I've sponsored. Hundreds. And I've noticed something. I've noticed some patterns over the last 32 years that whenever anybody's anxious that I sponsor, or even if I don't sponsor them, if I just mentor them, or whenever they're disturbed or anxious, there's always a large amount of thinking that precedes their being anxious. I'll ask them. They'll come up to you and they'll start telling me I have a problem. I said, you've been thinking, haven't you? They always say yes. They always say yes, you know? And what I've noticed about alcoholics is they think a lot. And I've been sober for a while, but there was a time in my life where I used to think a lot. And I'm talking about after I got sober. I used to think a lot. I couldn't help myself. But, you know, the not drinking is one thing, but the not thinking, man, that's a problem, you know? And you know what I found? I found every time I started thinking, it was usually bad thoughts about myself and other people. It was usually thoughts that made me uncomfortable. You know, I'd have to have the TV on or the radio on or be on the cell phone or be texting or be, you know, doing what they do. I guess what they do now is they text. Doing anything, any activity, so that I wouldn't have to think, whether it be gaming or whatever it is. And I think for alcoholics, if you're not drinking, the next best thing is just getting involved in anything that'll not put you in a position where you're thinking. And, you know, TV, talk, anything but sitting still and thinking, because thinking made me uncomfortable. Now, I used to drink, and that would fix that for a while, because that's why I'm an alcoholic, because no woman, no amount of money, no nothing, ever worked quite as well as just a few drinks. And, you know, alcohol works. It works quickly, you know, man, you can maybe have to go to 50 meetings to get the same effect one jigger of scotch gives you, you know, and it's, but, you know, one of the things that happens is when you come in here, of course, nobody comes in here to find God, and nobody comes in here to be good, because we know we all are good and misunderstood and victims and all that stuff, and, the only reason alcoholics go to, I'm convinced that the only reason alcoholics even go to Alcoholics Anonymous is because they think they have a drinking problem. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are right on the same page. I like to check, just to make sure I'm not in the Kiwanis Club, you know? I mean, I want to, there may be some guy in the back who says, no, I came here for the coffee, you know? No, I think that the only reason alcoholics go to Alcoholics Anonymous is because they have a drinking problem. Now, it may surface because they have a DUI or they're being divorced or something happens, but they have a drinking problem, and their life becomes unmanageable, hopefully. I mean, apparently that has something to do with the first step. You know, you're powerless over. I mean, the most important, really, I was told the first step in getting out of jail is knowing that you're in jail in the first place. So the first thing is not only knowing that you're an alcoholic and that you're powerless over alcohol, but your life has become unmanageable. I mean, for many years I drank and people would call me an alcoholic. I'd say, like, so what? Yeah, I drink for the noble art of getting bombed. All my friends drink like I do. But it wasn't until the consequences of my drinking came at me faster than my ability to lower my standards that I actually came in here. Because, you know, if you're an alcoholic, no matter how far down the food chain you get, no matter how disgustingly drunk or horrible or terrible you can get with people, because you are so brilliant and we are so facile and agile with our brains, we can somehow tell ourselves that it's not that bad, or we're not that bad, or everything's going to get better, or, you know, some sort of wishful thinking deal where we sort of minimize our deal and maximize other people's deal because it's never our fault. You know, I'm an if-onlier, I'm a yes-butter, I'm a you-don't-understander, it's not my fault, it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have done that, you know, yeah, I blew up your house, but you shouldn't have called me. You know, I mean, I have just got the whole world figured out, so I'm not to blame, and it's not my fault. And even if it is my fault, I wouldn't have done it if you didn't do it. Or if this didn't happen, you know, I don't drink because I have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems, and pretty soon my problems are going to go away, and I'm not going to have to drink anymore. As a matter of fact, my drinking perfectly matches my problems, so thank you for your advice. Why don't you go screw yourself? And I'm just like, and I think that my thinking is okay, and the only reason I come in here is not because of my thinking or not because of anything. I come in here to stop drinking. And the great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is it works. As a matter of fact, the problem with Alcoholics Anonymous is it works. You know, people get too well, too fast, and they stop drinking, and it works. That's a problem, you know, because then they get sober, and they get well, and they start feeling better. And sometimes they just don't get it somehow. They just have to keep on going out and going out and going out and out, going out until they get it. And some people never get it. You know, I was telling somebody the other day, because, you know, people, you know, one of the things that's mysterious about alcoholics, you know, I've sponsored many people, and it is a conundrum. It is sort of something that sort of plagues you. No matter how long you've been around, you see people go out and destroying their lives. You know, Carl Menninger wrote a book called Man Against Himself in 1938, you know, and before the Big Book was published. And in the chapter on alcoholism, he said alcoholics are men and women out to destroy themselves. It is sort of like a conundrum when you see an alcoholic that seems talented or intelligent or like a nice person, or you like him when he's sober or whatever it is, and somehow he's destroying himself or she's destroying. And you know, maybe somebody who comes in here and you like them, and then they go out again, and you say, why? And you'll say things like, well, certainly now that they got shot 15 times, they lost their kids, they'll never drink. Now they're really going to get it, and then they go out again. It really is. It's like puzzling. And so what you do as an alcoholic, as a codependent actually, and all alcoholics are somewhat codependent, but what codependents do is they sit here and try to figure out, you know, how am I going to fix them? That's what you want to do. You want to fix them. Well, the fourth step will fix them. The fifth step will fix them. Or I'll pretend some. Well, certainly this 16th treatment center will fix them. Because this treatment center will do the steps a little bit differently than the 13th treatment center. Or there's 14th detox or something like that will fix them. And the bottom line is of course, it's not treatment centers that fix anybody. Let me tell you a story. I had a sponsor named Bob Sullivan. I want you to listen to this. I'm going to read you some stuff from the book, but I want to tell you, I want to give you a little benefit of my experience, because that's what this is all about. It's not about how smart I am, it's about experience. Plus, you know, only 0.5% of alcoholics actually stay sober for 20 years. Most of them drink. And even the ones that stay sober are unhappy. Many of them are unhappy. Very few get rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence and experience much of heaven. Very few of them find the narrow way. Most of them go down the broad highway, because our selfishness, which is what the book says, we're so selfish in the extreme We so don't care about anybody else except ourselves. We're so unmindful of other people. And that is really the basis of the disease. Selfishness, self-centeredness, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion. We step on toes of others. They retaliate. We don't even know we're doing it. Our alcoholic life seems normal. It seems comfortable to be rude, to be everything. And we just don't get it. Sober. Sober. Not drinking. Sober. You know, that's why they say you can't even get it being nice to people. You know how they say alcoholics get a new change of perspective in the 12 and 12? By 100 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. That's how we learn. You know, you think we learn if you just be nice to an alcoholic and you just be pleasant and you just sort of like enable them and lend them the $10 and you think that they would learn. That certainly if I just bail them out of jail this time, they learn. No, they don't learn that. That's not the way alcoholics learn. Alcoholics learn by being spanked hard. At least that's how I learned as an alcoholic. I'm sitting with my sponsor. You know, I'm going to talk a little bit about what this is ultimately going to get to down the road when we talk about the fifth step. If we ever get to this, I'm going to talk about loneliness. And I'm going to talk about fear of people. Most alcoholics are scared of people. That's one of the reasons they drink when they're with people. You know, I mean, I know they say, well, I drank in bars and everything like that, and I like people. And, yeah, well, if you like people, why'd you always have to drink when you're with them? Why'd you always have to drink when you're having sex? Why'd you have to drink when you're going to dance? Why'd, every time you're around people, you had to drink. You had to drink when you weren't around people. When you think about people, you had to drink. You know, people scare the pajillies out of, alcoholics, which is probably why they tell us that one of the promises is that fear of people will leave us. They wouldn't tell us that fear of people would leave us unless they were scared of people. But, of course, we don't think we're scared of people. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? We don't think we're scared of people, but we're scared crazy of people. That's why what alcoholics really want when they ask you to sponsor them is they don't want to get to know you. They don't want to hang around you. They want you to tell them the answer so they can go on their way and never have to deal with you ever anymore. It's sort of like the movie The Great Escape where they're all captured, you know, but they're digging a tunnel to somehow get out. Almost every alcoholic is somehow digging a tunnel in his mind to figure out how to leave this place, you know, and make it on his own after gathering up all the knowledge in the world that they can. That's why Roland Hazard, he said, having known, you know, Roland Hazard, the guy who was putting some on the Dr. Young when he went to that treatment, he says, having now known the inner workings of my mind, drinking was impossible, and then he left Roland because he knew, he learned after a year all about himself, and then within 2 weeks, he hit Paris, and he was drunk again, and he came back, and you know, one of the things I've seen, now I sort of know it intellectually in a sense now, one of the things I sort of know, because I've watched it happen in my own life and other people's lives, is that loners never make it. And one of the things that alcoholics have to understand is they all have the capacity and the tendency to want to be lonely. They want to be left alone. I don't understand people that are loners that cannot immerse themselves in a group or force themselves to have relations. You cannot have a relationship with God, which is what this is all about, unless you can develop a strong relationship with other people. You cannot have a relationship with that thing that you cannot see if you cannot develop a relationship, a loving relationship, a needful relationship with that thing you can see. A relationship that's so strong that you would never drink. You'd never even think of drinking because if you drank, you might have to leave that relationship. And that relationship becomes more powerful to you and more important to you than anything in the world. And, you know, that's what I found over the years, you know, and I think it's scriptural. I think it's in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's in our book. And I have found that people that develop those relationships, everybody I know that has, you know, 20, 30, 40 years and has good sobriety, if he starts talking, he's going to talk about all his sponsors. He's going to talk about his sponsees. He's going to talk about the other people in his life where he learned things from. It's going to be just so embedded in their mind. You know, it's the same thing with the people in the big book. They're going to talk about other people and things that are embedded in their mind. And everybody I know who drinks, who goes out and drinks, have no relationships with people, just cursory relationships with people. They're loners. Their problem, they don't realize how absolutely stark, raving, insane they are. They haven't figured out the second step. They haven't figured out that their disease centers in their mind, not their body, that it's not booze, it's their brain. They haven't figured that out, and what they want to do is they want to sit alone with their brain and have that diseased brain fix itself. And the only thing the diseased brain does is magnify the disease to the point where every possible problem that diseased brain comes up with, including denial, gets worse and worse and worse until they get to the point where they can never come in. They never make it. Of course, the problem with associating with people, especially people who are sober people, emotionally sober people, is if they love you and you associate with them, you're probably going to get spanked. It's probably going to get your feelings hurt. And alcoholics prize their feelings, and we're kind of childish, and we don't like people telling us what to do and stuff like that. But it's absolutely necessary to get hurt. You know, it's absolutely necessary. I had a sponsor named Bob Sullivan who, I was about 3 months sober, 2 months sober. I'm sitting with about three or four people. And I didn't even realize this was wrong. I'm an alcoholic, and one of the things I like to do when I was in a bar or anywhere else is I'd like to talk. I didn't realize this was wrong. I didn't even know what gossip was because gossip was my way of life, but I didn't know that. That's what some women do. What I did was, if I was with somebody, my favorite hobby was talking bad stuff about other people behind their back. And I didn't think I was doing anything wrong because everybody I hung out with, they talk bad crap about other people behind their back. And so if I was saying something bad about somebody who wasn't there, as soon as I took a breath, Ralph was saying something bad about somebody else who wasn't there. So that's just, we just talk bad stuff about other people behind their back. Because what I've discovered is that when you feel crappy about yourself, and you think you're a piece of crap, and you know, basically most alcoholics basically feel they're pieces of crap. That's one of the reasons they feel bad, and they worry a lot about what other people think about. The reason alcoholics worry about so much about what other people think about them and how they sound and all that sort of stuff is because they don't think much of themselves, you know? And so they sort of know that other people must think they're pieces of crap because they know they're pieces of crap, you know? And they're always trying to figure out how to blend in, how to sound right, or how did I sound, or wear the right things, or do everything. Get accoutrements, get a new car, you know, get a new bike. Whatever it is they got to do, they got to add to themselves to make themselves acceptable because they know basically downside they're so non-acceptable. They're so unacceptable, which, you know, and drinking helps that for a while. That's one of the things that drinking helps. But it's just one of the problems of being an alcoholic. And I think I might have told you guys that I didn't. Maybe it was a different group. I had a guy I sponsored named Tommy. Thank God he's still sober after he's got like about 30 years now. And he came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was living alone, and he was like a hermit somewhere, and he finally came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and he loved alcohol. He loved it. He took to it. I can't tell you how much he loved being here. He said, it was like, I'm home, you know, and he was here 2 weeks, and he stopped drinking, and he cut his hair, and he, you know, went back to Ivy, he cut his hair. And what happened was, he called me up one day, and he sounded crushed. And I said, what's the problem, Tommy? He says, I don't know whether I'm an alcoholic. He thought he had to leave AA. He says, I don't know whether I'm an alcoholic. And I said, what do you mean? He says, Russell, he says, I'm not drinking, but I think I'm crazy. He says, I just think I'm crazy. And he sounded really upset, like he'd have to leave, because he figured out he stopped drinking. He wasn't drinking anymore, so he didn't have that alcoholism problem, but he thought he was crazy. And I immediately assured him, I said, Tommy, you can be both. Unless you understand that you're crazy, and you can be both. And sometimes it takes people many years to understand how sick they are. To even get it, you know, how sick they are. I'm sitting there one time in a meeting, you know, alcoholics like to talk while other people are talking. Did you know that? Because they don't give a shit about anybody else except themselves. Because what they have to say and what they have to do is more important than anybody else. So what they do is, that's why, you know, when you go to groups, you'll see, you'll be there and you'll be trying to listen to somebody and somebody will be talking, you know. And then they're not even, believe me, they're disturbing you because alcoholics are easily distracted. And you may say, you know, like in a movie theater, you ever notice that where people are talking when something's going on? You say, don't they understand that they're disturbing the people around them? And they don't understand because they're selfish and they're rude and they only care about themselves. You have to understand that about alcoholics. They're like children. And they don't give a crap about anybody except themselves. And so I did that one time in an AA meeting. You know, my sponsor said, shut up. I started talking to him. I was talking about something important, like look at the blonde in the front row and look at this. That's why sometimes you'll see people texting in a meeting and doing stuff like that. You know, my sponsor says about that. He says, that person will never stay sober. Never stay sober. Never stay sober. Because you got to be willing to go to any length if you're not ready, willing to shut up and not fool around with your cell phone or something like that. You'll never stay sober. Did you know that? That's true. One time I turned to my sponsor in a meeting and I started talking to him about another person who wasn't there. Behind his back. I didn't know there was anything wrong with that. I said, you know, Fred, somebody ought to do something about Fred. And he said, Russell, this is alcohol. And I was there with three or four other people. I had only about 3 months. And he said, you know, Russ, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, I don't know what fellowship you're in. He says, but in Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't talk about other people behind their back. So unless you have something good to say about somebody, why don't you just shut up? Hurt my feelings, you know. I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to be 64 years old. I'm 32 years sober. I remember that like it was yesterday. That's the impact it had on me. You know, if he had been nice to me or something, that's the impact he had on me. Now, of course, as an alcoholic, the first thing I want to do was rape his dog and kill his wife or something like that. Or who the hell does he think he is? What about, you know, love and understanding and all that sort of stuff? And he's not supposed to do that. And, you know, non-judgmental loving and all that crap and blah, blah, blah. And I was going to fire him and I was going to kill him. I was going to do all sorts of stuff. I was ripping him apart in my mind and everything. And but what happened was he had something. You know what the problem was? I didn't want to drink. And I had been sober for a few months, and I had somehow figured out in my mind, because I had never been sober and felt the way I felt, and I really cared about him, and I knew he cared about me, and I had somehow figured in my mind that he was instrumental, he had something to do with my sobriety. And I would have left. You see, that's the problem. If you're a selfish, self-centered alcoholic, and you're sick beyond your wildest expectations, you don't even know how sick you are, and you run, and you're in here, you're liable to run into a well person. There's a possibility. I know this ain't Well People's Anonymous, but you're liable to run into a well person. And you'll know the person is well because they'll look you in the eye and they'll hurt your feelings. And they'll take your inventory. And they won't care what you think because they're well. And they won't play around with you. You know what it says in the big book? Is everybody welcome in Alcoholics Anonymous? How many think everybody's welcome in Alcoholics Anonymous? Raise your hand if you think everybody's welcome in Alcoholics Anonymous. Two people? Do we welcome everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous? No, we don't. That's because you guys, you can decide whether or not you want to stay sober and learn this thing based upon the, quote, wisdom of the room. In other words, the wisdom of a conglomerate of a bunch of sick alcoholics that don't really want to do this, and whatever the common denomination, the common feeling is, or you can read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, you can read the big book. And if you read the big book, let's see whether I can find it. It says, but life among Alcoholics Anonymous is more than attending gatherings and visiting hospitals, cleaning up old scrapes, helping to settle family differences, explaining the disinherited son to his irate parents, lending money and securing jobs for each other when justified. These are everyday occurrences. No one is too discredited or has sunk too low to be welcomed cordially if, what does it say after that? If there's a condition. Did you know that? There's a condition. If he means business. I was brought up, I had sponsors say, why don't you go out there and drink? We don't want to fool around with your bullshit anymore. You know, we're serious about this. This is a serious disease. There are people dying here. Why don't you leave? You know? Why don't you leave? And so he told me, why don't you just shut up? And so I wanted to fire him. But what I didn't do, but I didn't fire him. So what I did is I did what all good alcoholics did because I wanted him to accept me. And that's why alcoholics do that. You know, I like to think I'm a leader, but I'm a follower. If it's a pot party, I'm smoking pot. If it's a cocaine party, I'm doing cocaine. If I'm in a country and western bar, I'm drinking beer. If I'm in Key West, I'm drinking, you know, margaritas. If I'm in New York, I'm drinking Manhattans or something like that. I'm always looking to do the thing, whatever it is. I never get it mixed up. I never go into a country and western bar and say, give me a Manhattan, you know, or, you know, a martini, you know. I'm always looking, you know. So the thing that, you know, because I'm a follower, I'm not a leader. So that thing that almost killed me out there, like to save me in here because I wanted to be accepted. So what happened was, and maybe it was not sincere at the time, but what happened is I stopped talking shit about other people behind their back. Because he spanked me and he made me feel bad. I mean, for the most part, you know, not perfectly, for the most part. As a matter of fact, like most alcoholics, I became like the AA police where I'd hear two people talking crap. I'd say, this is AA, we don't do this. But you know what happened after I started? So you know, the interesting thing about when you do that, when you stop talking, and, you know, I naturally want to talk crap about you behind your back. What happens is the only way you can stop talking about people, crap about people behind their back, is as you're about to talk crap about people, because, you know, I'm dying to talk crap about you behind. I'm just dying to do that. You know? And I'm starting to do that, but I know I can't do that. So you have to, this is what you got to do. You got to actually catch yourself from saying what you're going to say, and then you even have to shut up or say something good. So you say, you know that guy Ralph? He says, yeah, what about him? He says, he's an all right guy, you know? Now you're like, because you know I like to talk, so you like to talk. You know, as the Bible says, think of these things, whatever is true, whatever is nice. And so you do that for a few weeks or a few months. You start talking good things about other people instead of bad things. You know what happens? You start thinking good things about people instead of bad things. And you know what happened? When you start thinking good things about other people, and you're thinking all the time, and you're forcing yourself to think good things, and not think and not say bad things, you know what happened? I started feeling better about myself. Now, if I had told my sponsor, if my sponsor had told me, you know, Russell, if you don't gossip and talk bad things about other people, what will happen is you'll start thinking good things about other people, and what will happen is you'll actually start feeling better about yourself, and it'll help you. I would have told him to go screw him. I would, you know, I would never bought him that. But he didn't say that to me. He said, why don't you just shut up? And I did it anyway, and I learned that lesson. But the only reason I learned that lesson is because I love my sponsor, and I had a sponsor that I was close to, and I wanted him to like me, and I didn't want to disappoint him. And so even though he would tell me to do things that I thought were stupid, and not only did I think they were stupid, I'd be mad at him for telling him to do it. And I'd be upset with him, and I'd want to report him, and I'd be angry with him. I had that other thing going for me that I cared about him so much that I stuck around and I did it anyway. And because of that, I'm sober today. And, you know, there are people that will never have that relationship with anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because they think that they can get this program intellectually. They think if they do another four-step or another fifth-step or read the book or get real smart or go to another treatment center or do something like that, it'll somehow get it. And they'll never get it because they'll never understand this program has to do with things like love and relationships and faith in God. It does nothing to do with the brain. Has nothing to do with how smart you are. We got a lot of people that do millions of fourth steps. And, you know, listen, most of the guys I know that go out and drinking after a year or two or three or five or something like that have done their steps. I know guys that teach this stuff, you know, and they go out and they drink and they do their steps, these steps. This has to do with a radical change of life and a change of thinking. So just like it says in the big book, it says ideas, emotions, and the attitudes which were the driving force of these men's minds are shifted to one side, they become dominated by a whole different set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. So it's one thing to stop drinking, but how do you stop thinking those old ideas? How do you start acting on and thinking those old ideas and those old behaviors that you've been doing for 20, 30, 40, 50 years that seem so comfortable, almost like losing your right hand, if you're right-handed, or your left hand, if you're left-handed, when you run into some guy in here and says, from now on, you will no longer be right-handed, you'll be left-handed. And the only comfortable way you have of living is using your right hand. How are you going to go to one meeting or two meetings and learn how to do that deal? Think left-handed. When your whole life you just naturally think right-handed. How are you going to do? No wonder most people don't make this deal. Don't get this thing. And you know, so here's the deal. So I want to read a couple of things in the book and then try to make the point I was going to make. This is on page 191. Well, let me start off with, I'm going to read some fast things real fast from the book, and then sort of like try to make the point I was going to make. This is on He Sold Himself Short. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. By the way, the stuff I'm reading that he's doing, no alcoholics believe this. You wouldn't figure out this stuff out there on your own mind in a second. I'm telling you, living your life, no matter how much you know about this book, living your life, you wouldn't figure out this stuff, you wouldn't be this way. Ever. This isn't the way alcoholics think. This isn't the way they act. You know, this is the way alcoholics are. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. We're out there chomping at the bit, conquering the world, managing our lives, pushing people around, trying to get ahead, trying to get the stuff in our lives, worrying about the stuff we don't have. You know, the acceptance of things the way they are. You know, not tilting at windmills. Let me tell you something. This is the real deal. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair weather friends, and I was a fair weather friend, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Man, that's not what alcoholics brag about. They brag about their new car. They brag about their girlfriend, their boyfriend, or, you know, the trips they just went on. They don't talk about this stuff. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man. The love and understanding of a gracious God. This is the greatest thing in this guy's life. Well, you know, when you're rocketed in the fourth dimension, you know, when they talk about being rocketed, you know, they say the centerpiece of our lives, the central fact of our lives, is God has worked in our hearts miraculously. We're absolutely certain that he works in our hearts miraculously. He is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. This is what the real old-timers, this is what emotional sobriety is all about. This is what this deal is all about. You can do the steps so that the cows come home. You can go to treatment center. You can do whatever you want to do. Unless you want this thing, you ain't never going to make it. You're never going to stay sober. And even if you stay sober, you're going to be miserable. You're going to be living lives of quiet desperation. I have gained the greatest thing according to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. Now, I'm not taking any credit. Because I deserve no credit. I don't even know. I think it's a God thing. But I want to tell you something. That excited me. I wanted that. I can't explain why I wanted that and the guy sitting next to me wanted the blonde in the front row. I can't explain like I wanted that and the guy sitting next to me was texting his girlfriend. I can't explain like how this excited me and I wanted that and there were three or four people in the parking lot smoking cigarettes and joking. I can't explain why I wanted that, and most of the people in AA didn't want any of that or didn't even hear that. But I can tell you this, you can't force somebody to want that. You can't make somebody into that. You either want that either excites you and you want that or you don't, and you want something, you can read this book, then the cows come home, you can go to AA, you can go to any place you want, unless that excites you, you will never gain sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. You'll always be looking after the guy, the gal, the things of this world that you think will save you, and they will never work, and your mind will always be going 1,000 miles per hour. And that's just the bottom line truth. And the only thing, and I go around to A rooms because, you know, I serve. Because that's what I do. I serve. And this is how I serve. You know, just like the guy said, just like this thing on page 191, the guy in the bed when he was talking about Bill Wilson. You know, the Alcoholics Anonymous number 3 said, it would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have a release. They seemed to have a happiness, something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. You know what he was talking about? He was going to talk about what that other guy. He was talking about having the stuff that other guy just read to had. He noticed that. He noticed he was physically sober, but he didn't have that. Whatever that guy was talking about, he didn't have that. And that's what he wanted. That's what I wanted. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't gotten. I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, "Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people." This is what Bill, this guy wrote this when he was like, I don't know, I think he was around 15 years sober. And he remembered this just like a man. He said, "Henrietta, the Lord," and the guy wasn't even talking to him. He overheard it and talked to his wife. "The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. I think I have the answer." Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God the credit for having done it, and he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, "The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep telling people about it," has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. Is that an amazing thing? You got people going all over the world doing all sorts of things, trying to get sober and stay sober, and they can't do it, and this guy hears one sentence and he pins his entire life on it, that God is doing for him, and he's grateful to God, and he got everything else. That's probably why they say in the back of the book, "See to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others." Look to him, want him more than anything else, because if you want him and you look to him, you'll never be talking in meetings while somebody else is talking. You'd never do that, because it's rude. It's rude, because you'd have love in your heart, and you'd love other people, which is probably why they say in this book, right here, it says, probably why they say, in chapter 5, in talking about stop playing God, it says, when we sincerely took such a position of turning everything over to God, even our thoughts, you know what it says, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, our will and our lives, you know what that means? You turn everything over to God. That turns your will. You know what your will is? Your will is everything you want to do. And if there's anything left over after that, I will clump that into life. You turn that over too. There ain't nothing left with you. This is God's will that you should talk or interrupt or do anything during a meeting while somebody else is talking? Is that God's will for you? You think, or is that your will? Persons who are involved in this will never do the things you see alcoholics do. He would never do it. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, on that footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. Man, I'll tell you, that's something. Give me an alcoholic who's not interested in his little plans and designs. I was talking about this last night, the details. They want to tell you the details of their lives. All they want to do is talk about their lives and the details of their life. He said this and she said that and this happened. It's all about me, 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 me. A life of me. You got to figure you get sick of that crap after a while. How much of you can you actually stand? I'll tell you what. My sponsees must love me because I'll tell you, I'm not a nice person when I'm around them. Yeah, I give them about 5 seconds of me. So I don't want to hear this crap, you know. Go out and drink or something. Go bore somebody else with it. Grow up. What are you, 40 years old? What are you, 50 years old? More and more. You know what the problem is? They have people in their lives that actually listen to them. More and more we became interested in... They weren't properly fathered or mothered. I don't know what it is. More and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, we became conscious of His presence. We began to lose fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. So, I was on Relay for 8 years. For 8 years, if you called up Alcoholics Anonymous, between the hours of 11 o'clock on Friday night and 8 o'clock on Saturday morning, drunk, sober, whatever it is, you got me. Of course, during that period of time, nobody got sober, you know? Call me up. I'm going to commit suicide. I said, well, what are you buying me for? You know, I could have read about this. Could have read about this in the paper, you know? In any event, so I get a call one night at 11, 12 o'clock, whatever it is. It was early. It was before 12, about some guy who he says, I'm sober. You know, I've been in AA, you know what I mean? But I feel like drinking, and I don't know what to do, and my mind's killing me. It's ganging up on me. He's talking to me. So whenever I get a call, like around 11:30, I know AA rooms are still open. The car rooms are still open. So I try to find out where they are so I can get him to a room. So I said, well, where are you? He says, I'm in Carl Gables. So I said to him, I knew that the car room had just finished a meeting. They had like a 10:30, 11:30 meeting, and there were people there. I said, listen, you know where the car room is? He says, yes. He says, I want you to get over the car room. They're just finishing a meeting. I want you to talk to somebody over there. And they said to me this. He said, I'm in the car room. You can't make this shit up. You don't think I'm making this? He says, I'm in the car room. I said, what do you mean? He says, I'm calling you from a payphone in the car room. He was scared to go up to anybody else and talk to him. So he called up Alcoholics Anonymous. The other night I said there was a lady talking in the meeting, you know, and she had extreme agony going on because some serious circumstances going on in her life. And I said to her, you can always tell. You can tell. I said, do you have a sponsor? And the answer is no. Because when people are talking about horrible things that are going on in their lives at meetings, the reason they're talking about horrible things going on in their lives at meetings is because they have nobody else to talk to about them. They don't have a sponsor. So they use the group as their sponsor. And you can never get right feedback. You can get some feedback, but you can never really. So the real question is, how can somebody be in here for 3 or 4 months and have all sorts of crap in their mind and not have a sponsor? Well, the reason why people don't have sponsors is because they are loners, because they're scared of other people. They're scared of their judgment. They're just scared. They don't even know why they don't have a sponsor. They just don't, because they're different, because she wouldn't understand, because something bad's going to happen. They're just alone. You know what happens? You ever been worried about something, and you're thinking about it in yourself, and you're worried about it, and you don't tell anybody because nobody's going to understand anybody, and you're so unique, you wouldn't even know how to explain it, so you just keep it to yourself, and you think about it all the time? How's that work out for you? Is that a lot of fun? Well, listen, that's an old idea. That's part of those old ideas that you got to get rid of and smash. You got to start doing things differently. So I said to her, there were three girls there. I said, they're going to be your sponsor. She says, no, I don't want to bother them. What is that all about, that false pride? What is that all? You see, they're fighting the well. They're even fighting the suggestions of wellness, even knowing that it's the right thing to. That's this disease. This disease is a disease where you say, I'm going to kill myself unless I have a relationship with somebody. And you say, there's Mildred. She's got a relationship with you. No, that's okay. And stone cold sober. That's the disease of alcoholism. That's the disease of alcoholism. That's what it looks like. You know, when people, and that's what the fifth step is all about. The fifth step is, you know, we have relationships. You know what they say casual acquaintances? We have casual acquaintances. We have, how are you doing? Fine. You know, it's good to see you. It's good to see you. You know, I haven't seen you for a while. I haven't, you know, how about the Marlins? You know what I mean? We have casual, superficial relationships in our lives, and then we walk away and we get in our car, and all we do is think about this, and we think about the money, and we think about the girlfriend, and we think about the boyfriend, and we think about the husband, we think about the wife, we think about our life, we think about all this crap that's driving us nuts that we don't have the guts to talk to anybody about. And even if we talk to somebody about, we hide and we cover up, we make ourselves look better than we are or worse than we are, and then we have nobody to talk to, we have nobody to set us straight, nobody to make things balanced out so that we can see where it really is. And then all we do is think about ourselves and we go nuts, and we look okay on the outside because we want to make sure that we want to blend. We have no decent, loving, serious relationships with anybody. We don't open up to anybody. If we're lucky, we go to a meeting or something, we start talking and some old-timer beats the crap out of us until we fess up or something because he sees the bullshit. You understand what I'm saying? But we don't even like that because that hurts. You know what I mean? And you're lucky if you run into one of them son of a bitches anyway. You know what I mean? I'm going to tell you later on about some of the guys I ran into who beat the crap out of me. That's why I'm abusive to people. Because I was abused. You know, when you're abused, you become abusive. But believe me, no matter how abusive I could be to an alcoholic to get them to see what's going on, it's nothing compared to what alcoholism will do to them out there. I won't cause you to lose your kids. I won't cause you to lose your life. You know what I mean? It'll just be a little painful for a few minutes. You know what I mean? Until you go and you figure out, you know, I think that son of a bitch was right. And you'll still feel better. All of a sudden, it'll feel better. You know, it's like a spiritual MRI, you know? So I have a guy come up to me. I'm going to end up by telling this last deal. I have a guy who asked me, you know, to be a sponsor. You know, they come up to me. He says, you know, I was thinking, I've been watching you. I've been thinking, you know, I'm sort of looking around for different people to sponsor. What are you asking? He says, well, I was just wondering. I said, are you asking me to be your sponsor? He said, are you asking me? He said, well, yeah. I said, well, why don't you ask me? He says, will you be my sponsor? I said, yes. You know, and because that it's scary. Well, you know, imagine this. When you know you're in trouble and you know you have to get a sponsor, but you're scared, that's alcoholism. That's alcoholism, you know? If you can't even ask somebody, you know, I'm with the guy today. Now, I'm going to tell you the truth. Okay? The way I see it. Now, this is my opinion based upon my life and what I've seen. And if you don't like it, it's just because you don't like it. You're going to have to figure out why you don't like it. So he comes up to me. He says, so what do I do? They want to know what to do to become wonderful. He's got 2 years. He wants, so what do I do to become wonderful, like overnight? So I said, well, the first thing you got to do is meet me on Saturday morning. We'll talk about it, you know, hang out with the guys. So he comes Saturday morning and, you know, we hang out and we have coffee and we have donuts and we're talking about everybody and everybody's there. And I say, you know, and I said, Steve, everybody, this is Steve. And I introduce him to all the guys. And he says, after he's done, he says, now what do I do? You ever say this? What do I do? He's looking for the assignment. He's looking for the schoolwork, you know, the assignment that he's going to do and become wonderful. And I said, well, this is what you're going to do. You hang out with me for about 20 years. Stick close. And we're going to go to the restaurants, you know, we're going to go to different places. We'll go to meetings. You just stick close to me for 20 years. And I promise you, in about 15 years, you're going to start feeling good. That's the way it worked out for me. I hung out with these guys. They would die on you. They'll die on you. They'll die of cancer. You'll hang out with this guy for like 5 years or 6 years. He'll take you to a certain level, to a certain place. You start learning how they think. You know, that's how I learned how to think about it. You know how I learned how to think about things and how to not think about things and what was important, not important? By hanging about around my sponsor and modeling myself after him. I would say something that I thought was important. He says, that's stupid. What are you even thinking about that? You know, after you say the same thing over and over again, because you're used to thinking the same thing over and over again, because it's the way you've always thought, 15 times, and after he says you're stupid, and you say, you know, that is stupid. If you're an alcoholic, after he does that 1,000 times, on the 1,000th of one time, you said, man, that is stupid, you know? And then you stop doing it. And then 5 years down the road, you're telling other people that, and you're not doing it anymore, and you feel better. You don't understand what I'm saying? You think this is this disease that you've had for 20, 30, 40 years because of way of thinking, you think you walk into a room and you read a book, and you ask somebody a question, and then all of a sudden you're not thinking that way anymore? You got to hang around sober people. You got to find out how they think. You've got to watch how they talk to other people. You got to watch what they think about, how they act, why they're not worried about money, why you're worried about it all the time, why they're not worried about cancer, why you're worried about it all the time, why they're not worried about relationships and how they handle their wives while you worry about it all the time. You got to see how they act and how they are, and maybe after 10 years, you might turn into something close to them. And then they'll die of cancer and you got to find another guy or another gal. And you want to know how many people don't want to do that? They're not willing to go to any length. And you know, if you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, you know what that was all about? That was about relationships. About Bill loving Bob and Bob loving Bill. And people, you had people who were Bill people and you had people who were Bob people. And all they did was talk about Bill, and they followed Bill around. And then they had people who they discipled, who loved them. They followed them and everything like that. And it was just groups of people loving each other and looking up to people with spots and not putting them necessarily on a pedestal. But let's face it, we do have leaders here. They're called trusted servants. And people hanging out with these people. You see, you got a lot of people that come in here and want the answer. They really think that their life is going to be solved by a 28-day treatment program. Or about 3 months in long term. They really think that's going to change them. Forget it. You're an alcoholic. You're meant to be an alcoholic. You're self-destructing to the extreme. You're going to kill yourself in this world with what's going on out there. And it's not stopping. And it's getting worse. You think you're going to go for 3 months, 6 months, a year. And they throw you out there into that world. And all of a sudden you're going to be okay. It's going to cure you. Forget it. You better surround yourself like hedges with people who are doing this deal and are solid as rocks for about 20 years. Until this thing is so ingrained in you, you know? And it's so solid in you, it's so second nature to you. And then still do it. Go out there and teach it or talk to other people about it or be involved in step meetings or do this sort of stuff so you'll never forget it. Because your natural bent is to go back to that selfish behavior. And then you got a shot. No wonder people go out and drink again. Because, you know, most people just want the answer, thank you very much, and then I'm going home and watching Lifetime Channel. Huh, look at those people, you know what I mean? Dysfunctional people. And so that's what the fifth step is all about. It's learning how to build relationships. When you think about it, what it is, it's the first time in your life where you're building a relationship with another individual, where you're talking about the truth, you know? But what it really is, it's a model for your relationships from now on. You know what the funny thing is? And I'm going to end up with this. Every you guys may think this is crazy. Some people know this. I have a list of about 70 guys. And every day, they get a text message. Every day, except for maybe the weekends, they get a text message. Right, Clark? Clark's on the list as to where we're eating lunch. Sometimes 20 show up. Sometimes 30 show up. Sometimes 5 show up. Sometimes 3 show up. Been doing this for like 10 years. And that's just one thing. We do that a lot. You understand? Now, I know some people maybe listen to this tape, or this day, or maybe say, this is crazy. You want to know something? Our conversations at lunch, our casual conversations about everybody at lunch, are like most people's fifth steps. Do you understand what I just said? Like, I have guys that come up to me and says, I want to talk to you personally. The most personal conversation, a part of these guys' lives, you know, we're usually having at lunch, you know, over a hamburger. These guys have no problems. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, they're fine. They don't have any secrets. I mean, they may have a secret, but I'm saying they know how to develop honest relationships with other people. And you know who the guys are who have problems? The ones who aren't showing up at lunch. The ones that don't show up, they eventually show up after they drank or something like that because they're just not, they're not doing that deal. You know, it's easy to take the big book at home and go and study it. I'll tell you what, it's difficult to build relationships and hang around people. Build solid relationships with old timers, people around and hang around. That's difficult. You want to think of every reason why. Oh, he just wants me to hang. You want to think of every reason why not to do it when you know it's healthy as hell. Right? You know it's healthier than hanging around yourself. Everybody in here knows the worst thing you could do is hang around yourself. You're your worst enemy. You know that's right. And yet, even as I'm saying this, you're saying that can't possibly be helpful. You know what I mean? There's got to be another way. Right? That's the disease. I mean, I know you think the disease is booze. I'm telling you what the disease actually looks like. It looks like you wanting to be alone at home and trying to stay sober just on maybe a meeting a day or one meeting a week, and then not having to associate with anybody else. You know, that's the disease of alcoholism. That's the difference between people who are happy and people who make it and people who live lives of quiet desperation and who are lonely even though they're sober. So thank you. Next week we'll talk about step 7.